Ron, thank you for being here for this summit. I really appreciate it. Ron Carucci is a co-founder and managing partner at Navalit, working with CEOs and executives pursuing transformational change. He's the best-selling author of 10 books, including To Be Honest and Rising to Power. He's also a contributor to the Harvard Business Review, which is where I became aware of his great work. Ron, thanks again for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. So Ron, as I told you before we rolled tape here, I've been looking forward to this conversation. We had a chance to briefly talk about a week ago. And so let me start with this. We're going to talk about a bunch of things related to your experiencing working with CEOs and organizations and incivility in the workplace. So I guess where I'd like to start is, how do you define workplace bullying? And what are the associated behaviors you're seeing in the workplace regarding incivility in the workplace?
Well, let me start by saying thanks for having me, Andy. I appreciate the work you're doing, and I appreciate the chance to be part of the conversation. Workplace bullying, you know, the word bullying, unfortunately, often gets associated with the kids at the playground being each other, or the junior high school kids pranking each other. But at the end of the day, what bullying comes down to is a power differential. And I don't mean hierarchical power. I mean any influential power where somebody is using that power for their own gain, others' expense. It's exploitation, whether it's demeaning, whether it's keeping people in a place, whether it's publicly shaming people, whether it's out-and-out exploitation. And often we associate with a power differential of hierarchy down, but actually a researcher revealed that a lot of people bully their bosses. And the crowdsourced gaslighting phenomenon of bullying up or going around your boss to their boss and creating a sandwich reality. So there are lots of ways it shows up. In our Harvard Business Review article, there's a whole taxonomy. We created types of bullying and types of behavior and types of remedies for those.
But predominantly, it's top down, at least in my experience. And I've been in television for 25 years in New York City. In my experience, and I don't see it holistically the way you do and the way you have, but in my experience in television and television production, it's been top down. Is that predominantly what you see in your work?
No, actually, I think, you know, in hierarchical driven cultures and power driven hierarchies, certainly that's what you're going to find. I think in networked organizations, it's peer bullying.
Uh-huh.
It's gaslighting. It's manipulation. It's zero sum thinking about how we get resources. And certainly in places where cultures that pride themselves on being more progressive, where you do sort of have the upside down pyramid. Bottom up bullying can be very common because people can exploit that care.
Yeah.
So I think it's multi-directional.
Okay.
I think we should assume it's only top down. It certainly can be. But I think it's any place where people, whatever the source, power is a currency, right?
And yeah.
Whenever currency is in your power economy of your organization, any place that currency can be exploited, you're going to find bullying.
So let me ask about that and tell you about this. So I created a television show years ago with what I would consider a stereotypical Southern sheriff, almost central casting. And he was the host of the show, and the inmates were the guests in the audience. And his whole persona was as a bully. I'm not suggesting he didn't care about the inmates. He didn't abuse the inmates. I'm not saying anything of the sort, but his persona was as a bully. He promoted that notion. And so it seemed to me that nobody has more power over a human being than someone who's in jail or prison. I mean, they've lost almost everything, including their freedom. For fear of being melodramatic, it seems to me that the workplace has some of those elements where the boss or your colleagues are all fighting for power, and even the inmates are fighting for that little bit. So my question for you is that a fair kind of comparison? And does the workplace have to be that way? And how are you combating that, I guess?
Well, so there's three questions. And let me start with the first one. The comparison is fair if you look at the data around employee engagement, if you look at the data around the number of people leaving the workplace, because let's be clear, people don't quit jobs. People quit bosses.
Yeah.
And that's, so we have plenty of data that suggests organizations become prisons of their own making. So that there's no bars I can't get out. I'm free to go. But when you get Stockholm syndrome, when you get trauma-informed, you know, people choosing environments because it repeats a narrative of victimization for them, then yes, there is this sort of imprisoning factor, especially when the two questions workers show up every day looking to ask is, do I matter and do I belong? And when they doubt, when they doubt the question, the answer to either of those is yes, they go about the counterfeits, looking like they matter and looking like they belong, which is where bullying has its origins.
Can I ask, is there a third one? And again, I can only relate it to my experience. Do I matter? For me, the thing that popped into my head, and forgive me for trying to have a therapy session here, but it's, do you care about me?
So I think it's the same thing. If I matter, I'm going to know I matter because you show me care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to know that my work is respected. I'm going to know that my contribution, and I'm going to know that I belong because you accept me.
Yes.
You're hospitable to me. I don't have to alter who I am in your presence to avoid a certain reaction or to engineer a certain reaction. So it's part and parcel. Leaders don't understand that their number one job every day is to make sure nobody doubts that the answer to those questions is yes.
So few of them do that. So few leaders do that, it seems to me.
And so many do. I think your experience is not that unique in that it was a horrible experience. And you were in an industry that is characterized by just, you know, exploitation of all kinds. Mm-hmm. I think across media, whatever the channel happens to be, television or otherwise, newspapers, magazines, any kind of media today, because the industry has been dramatically disrupted. The way they make their money is dramatically changing and being compressed. And so people are just scrounging. So it doesn't surprise me that you're supposed it was, but there are actually wonderful organizations and industries out there for which that's the case.
Well, and I think probably a good number of them, and I want to talk about this, are ones that you've worked with. And so, because my experience was, I was in television. And so for me, I thought, this is television, live television, television in New York, with media companies that you know, people know about and have heard of, MSNBC, CNBC, Court TV, Wall Street Journal, places like that. And so I thought, hey, in a way, for fear of being gendered about this, and I don't really mean to, but it's a term, you know, man up, Andy, this is what you asked for and deal with it. And so then when I started thinking about my career and looking into and finding experts like yourself, I realized that it's certainly not unique to TV, which I thought it kind of was. It's across all industries.
Sure. Good and bad. I think there are cultures that do discourage misuse of power. In our 10-year research for Rising to Power, one of the things we found in the 2,700 leaders we studied is that the greatest abuse of power was not for self-interest or self-gain. It was abandonment. It was the letting go of that power in favor of currying popularity or currying or buying respect or other forms of benevolent leadership that are just as weak and just as destructive as the forms of power that are for self-interest. Yeah. So, I think to your question, what does the pervasiveness look like? It's out there. There are some pretty hostile, which is why we now have lawsuits called hostile workplace.
Yeah.
And people being sadly having to be paid out millions and millions of dollars for the personal stressors and the impacts on mental and physical health those environments have.
And please go ahead.
So to your answer and question about what are we doing about it, I think organizations are investing heavily in, until recently, trying to create inclusive cultures, certainly in how they develop their leaders and how they coach their leaders and how to prepare leaders for broader responsibility. There are lots of investments being made there. And I think that organizations are recognizing that, when you don't have a culture that is conducive to your best talent thriving, your great talent is going to quit and leave, and your mediocre talent is going to quit and stay.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a reason why this is important, not just because it's nice to have.
Yeah.
Now, sadly, what we're seeing with this horrible backlash now of DEI efforts being withdrawn because you have activist investors and shareholders probably many of the white supremacists, the "we will not be replaced" campaign.
Yes.
Actively causing organizations under the ridiculous guise of meritocracy.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get organizations to not invest in inclusivity with the very misguided assumption that it's already a level playing field. We don't need to make it any more level than it already is.
And we know it's not.
There's not a shred of data that was whatever.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask a little bit more about that, because the backlash against DEI is going to continue to keep this this disparity, if you will, and a lack of fairness. You've identified some bullying myths that I thought were really interesting as it related to kind of bully bosses. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the myths you have identified?
How kind of you to assume that I memorized them.
Okay. So I'll go into it. One is, and I'll give you my personal experience, that I worked with a bully boss who used to say he was tough but fair. And my argument would be, well, he was one of those. And so, the myth being that I was reading from you was that somehow we work harder and better, almost like the kind of coach, the hard-nosed coach that if he's screaming at you and swearing at you, that somehow you'll play harder and better. Can you talk
a little bit about that? That might be the outcome, but it's not driven by desire. It's driven by fear.
Okay.
I
was an athlete also in high school. And I'm a hard worker. I believe one of the hardest workers you bought first in the office, all those things. I never worked harder or better when somebody was being mean to me, and they often were.
Yeah. I think all those myths are just simple, rather transparent justification is used to justify bad behavior. That's all I mean.
And I
have a client right now who in a very, if you can believe it, a far more ruthless industry than television.
Okay.
And we did a bunch of interviews. And in the interview, people would say of this one leader who's clearly an antagonistic, mean-spirited bully, who in my interview with him said to me, "We have got to start treating bully respect around here." So he has a value system of respect in some form, just not his own behavior. It has no calibration. When people work on his projects, they advance, right? So he prides himself and actually proclaims, "I'm the kingmaker here. I'm the queenmaker here." And so, there is some bizarre correlation between people whose careers have advanced and have worked on his teams. And the ones with thick enough skin, you have to just ignore all the crap, of how he behaves, especially when things aren't going well, and just take what you can get out of it.
Well, and that was my experience. That was much of my experience. I that's so hard to do. And it's almost like, it seems like what he's saying, and this leads to another one of the myths that I read in some of your work, which is that, I'm being so tough on these people because I'm holding them to a higher standard. And I think then the assumed result of that is you're going to move up. And it happened to me. I was often reporting to the CEO, but boy, oh boy, the pressure and tension and aggression. Look, I want to be honest. Nobody ever threw a stapler at my head. I've never gushed blood. I was not sexually harassed. I'm not a Me Too person. But I also want to bring back something that you said earlier, and I know you know the distinction, but some people watching this may not, is that there are laws against throwing staplers at people's head. There are laws protecting people who have been sexually harassed. Now, we can argue whether the laws are sufficient, fair enough. But in terms of somebody with workplace aggression, with significant and daily or weekly or monthly or the threat of workplace incivility, which is what I experienced, there's no law. It's perfectly acceptable
not true at all.
Okay, you tell me.
There are lawsuits being won every day for hostile work environments, violent work environments. There are people working with millions of dollars. So there are at least...
Even if they're not a protected class?
It's... So there are plenty of civil laws that require organizations to create not hostile work environments. So, you watch HR departments fall over the minute somebody plays the hostile work environment here or unhealthy, toxic workplace card, because those are all pre-indicators of a lawsuit coming. And so okay,
but I keep hearing, and look, I can't debate this issue because you're out there talking to everybody. I'm doing this. But what I'm hearing from people is that HR departments are essentially feckless. And this is my experience, but this is, you know, smaller companies in some cases, maybe you're dealing with bigger companies, but that if the CEO or a top person or a perceived rainmaker is doing the bullying, that it's often either ignored, allowed, or even encouraged, as we've talked about, because he's being tough on people and they're working harder and all that kind of thing. So what's your experience there?
It's a range. I mean, HR departments range from, you know, stuck in the 60s to very progressive and very, very much a seat at the table with an important voice. I think there is quite a range of them out there, but they're writing big checks in severance agreements to avoid lawsuits, for sure.
Yeah.
And their company counsel is joining them in that pursuit. So all I can say is there are, in fact, legal parameters requiring organizations, whether or not people pursue them, whether or not people actually bring those complaints forward or not, different issue. But listen, in the research, but to be honest, it is unmistakably clear. The companies that are more honest, more gracious, have healthier cultures that are purpose-driven creating inclusive environments that are transparent with their information, those companies outperform their less than those things competitors by ridiculous margins. And we looked at every metric in the book, share of market, profitability, customer satisfaction, customer retention, innovation reputation. Pick the financial or performance metric, and every one of them was dramatically exceeded by those organizations compared to their, you know, less than stellar competitors.
Yeah, good for you. I mean, those are all great data points.
You know, so you can continue to behave, you know, horribly as an organization and export your best talent to your competitors, and keep the B and C team.
Yeah.
And tell yourself you're holding them to high standards. Really what you've done is you've taken a standard and you've just weaponized it.
Yeah.
Well, so everybody knows that.
Yeah. So let me ask this, because you lead me right to something that I'm really interested in, which is, and something that is at the heart of your work. With the litany of detriments to the organization that you've just pointed out, and I would add, as you know, and you... employment retention and the cost of hiring new talent and whether you're going to get somebody who's really better than the last person. Obviously, they're not going to have institutional knowledge. So all of those costs as well. Why do you think organizations have been so unsuccessful at addressing and correcting this, what I would consider as a ubiquitous and corrosive problem? Now, again, you're seeing some progress, but it still seems like they're not doing what they need to do to address this, even just in a selfish way to make their business better.
Yeah. So my guess is twofold for the companies that are not, because there are many companies that are work in this area. The ones that are not haven't tried. Like, none of your organizations have attempted to create healthy, inclusive cultures where your best talent can thrive. You know, if they had told me they made an effort to do it, but it just didn't work, I'd say, okay, sure. But my guess is that it's not even on the radar screen. And the companies that have competed in monopolistic markets, that have not faced disruption before, that have not had a catastrophe as a result. One lawsuit. It's funny how we get called and say, we want to change our culture to include integrity. Okay, so you got sued. It's not hard to figure out when values become the lever now we want to leverage. Okay, how much did you lose in a suit? So unfortunately, or fortunately, however you choose to see it, catastrophic outcomes do wake people up.
Yeah.
The reality is, what I have to tell my clients over time is that moment in your story didn't cause this problem. It revealed it. It took you 25 or 30 years to toxify this environment. I'm not going to fix it with a pill. So if you really are serious about systemically rooting out the toxins here that you've worked very hard to master, I'll help you. If you're looking for a cosmetic brush on the appearance of a healthy culture, I can get you a magician. I'm not the guy.
Yeah.
But I think there are companies out there who, because they have to compete in the way they do, with whom they have to compete, are deeply making sure that their cultures are psychologically safe, that their environments are allowing talent to have a voice, that leaders are treating people with care, with respect, with, you know, inclusivity and with civility. And where the kind of behavior you're talking about, I mean, even the hint of it would get you thrown.
Yeah.
So they're out there, and because they have no other option, you know. And of course, when that CEO or that senior leadership team turns over, if you don't get leaders coming behind them who share the same convictions, you're probably going to have erosion.
Yeah. In your work, how would you address this situation, acknowledging no magic pill, acknowledging you're not a magician? And I say that in my own world as a producer. People used to come to me with certain things. I'm like, I'm a producer, not a magician. So, yeah. So I appreciate that perspective very much. But in the circumstance where the organization may come to you, but it's the CEO and the CEO has to sign off on it. So maybe it's the number two guy who's perceived as a rainmaker or a great leader or a guy that's using his bully pulpit literally and figuratively to manage the staff. It's usually a guy with tight connections or a woman to the top person. I've had experiences where no one's going to come after them because of their seat to power. I've also seen a very specific example where the top person said to the bully and to the target, you work it out, work it out. So how do you combat that as somebody who has expertise in dealing with organizations who have maybe a lack of integrity or an aspect of incivility?
Well, so in the first scenario where I've got a leader who's, you know, the results oriented, more often than not, it's actually the case that those leaders aren't intentionally being bullies. That's what they learned to get the results. And they've never had a consequence for it. They've never had a complaint. You know, they've never lost marquee talent because of it, but they're on the brink of it. And often I enter the story when the CEO says, the CEO needs an executive coach, which I'm thinking, what's that? Yep. And I'll find out that there's, you know, some rough edges. And so, you know, if I choose to take that client on, I'll go get all my data.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, shockingly to me, those leaders are shocked by the data. Because we share everything we hear. They don't know who said it or it's not attributed, but they hear every verbatim comment we had. You know, things like, he will take your head off for just even looking the wrong way. There's no way you would ever disagree with him in public, whatever. They just clearly extreme versions of an oppressive environment. And so, you know, I don't bring judgment. I simply say to people, to those leaders, do you want people bringing you their best ideas? Can you afford to have people only agree with you? Do you need people? Do you assume that you're always right with every idea you have and that you don't need their thinking? If you were about to, you know, unequivocally head off a cliff with one of your convicted projects or your pet projects, and they all knew what was going to happen, would you want them to tell you? You know, I get all the right answers. I'm like, so great. None of that can happen today.
Yeah.
So would you like to change that? So I bring them back to it. How does it make you feel that people refer to you as a bully, as mean, as someone they don't respect, as someone they don't feel respected by? And more often than not, they're devastated. They had no clue, but they're actually devastated to hear.
Yeah.
There are some people who don't give a crap. I can spot those a mile away. I usually don't even take them as clients.
Yeah, I would think so. Because again, I would love to see that. That I'm a TV producer. I'd love someday to see that on video, that transformation. And I believe you can do that. I believe it can be done. Is it a lack of self-awareness? Is it self-importance? Is it entitlement? Is it ego? Because to have that limited kind of, again, awareness of your effect on other people is astounding to me, frankly.
It's so different than you and I. You and I had that same blind spot, have our own blind spots, right? So it's not, theirs having to be larger because they went so long uncalibrated.
Uh-huh. Right?
You don't have regular sources of feedback to sort of calibrate how others are experiencing us.
Yeah.
I tell my leaders all the time, if someone is not coming into your office once or twice a week, telling you something that makes you uncomfortable to hear, you can be 100% certain your leadership sucks.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. If that's the standard to which you're trying to aspire and you're okay with that, great. I have no way I can help you.
Yeah.
But if that scares you because of what risk you're inserting into your enterprise by people withholding information from you that they're sharing freely at their dinner tables every night, you are, as a leader, the topic of conversation every night at someone's dinner table on your team. If you don't know what stories they're telling about you, you should want to get in on a conversation.
Yeah.
So those leaders often, you know, are just, yes, clueless, but painstakingly heartbroken when they realize their values and their behaviors are so misaligned.
Yeah.
The guy I told you about before, when he said to me in my interview, we have got to keep respecting people here, I believe he meant it.
Wow.
I believe he was sincere. And then it's a deep dive of him. I believe he has no idea. Everybody in his company would say, he's been told. I'm like, well, how has he been told? Really?
Well, so is he BSing you or he, you know, at least at the beginning?
I think he is sincere in those guys. I think other people are BSing me when they tell me he's been told.
He hasn't been told in a way, maybe. Maybe it needs somebody like you.
He's been told, you know, you should be a little nicer.
Right.
Maybe manage your stress a little.
Yeah.
He's not been told, you are experienced this way. People can't, you know, whatever. And he grew up in an era of an industry where it was Mad Men.
Yeah.
Where it was, that's how you behave. That's how you acted.
That's all he knows. So let me ask that.
Well, it's what he knows because no one's ever given him any invitation to anything different. We don't know that he's not capable of changing. We know that he hasn't changed.
Okay.
Until I get evidence that says he's a lost cause, I'm willing to give it a shot to see how can I help him become a better version of himself. Now he's the worst version of himself. No matter how brilliant he is technically in his discipline, and apparently he's brilliant.
Okay.
He's a failure.
Yeah. Right. Great point. So let me ask this. If a guy like that, or this guy that you're referring to, is contrite in a legitimate way, how long does it take him in working with him to turn his behavior around? And how long does it take? We only have a couple minutes left, but I really want to get to this one, where it can permeate, I was going to say the newsroom, because that's my, but can
well,
it permeate the organization?
You know, it depends on how the, I mean, we, if I'm their coach, you know, in 6 months, you're going to see a very different person. But you're also going to see a very different person next week because we're going to do our mea culpa tour first. And I tell
so you have him go around apologizing or?
Oh, yeah. I thank you for this feedback. It hurts me. Yeah. You have my commitment that I'm going to work on.
Great.
Now I tell the team, accept his apology. It's not change.
Yeah.
It's just the beginning of remorse. But what I remind the team of is, careful what you wish for, because when he becomes more inclusive, you have to be more included. When he becomes more transparent, you have to become more forthright, right? So they're not bargaining for the requirements of his change. And so what happens is as he, you know, and he'll skin his knees, he'll make some mistakes and they'll see, I knew it, but he'll keep trying. But as he does, people realize, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how conditioned I'd become. How masterfully I had become skilled at working around his psychology. I now have to change my behavior because those leaders will tell me in 4 months is I'm doing what they asked me to do and they're just pushing back. I'm like, it's called change back syndrome.
Yeah.
Because they now have to risk different behavior in trusting that your new behavior is A, real and B, sustainable and C, they don't have those skills.
Yeah.
You condition them not to have them. So we have to change the system, not just his behavior.
Yeah. The worst thing I found, second to the physical effects of bullying, which we don't have to get into now, but was the chilling effect in all organizations. You're scared to give an idea. You're scared to say, I don't think that's the right way. So I think a chilling effect in my business, I'm in the media and communication. That's the worst thing that happened. If you can give me a brief answer to this, and I'm not sure it's possible, but if you can try, I understand that you're making progress and you're seeing, fair enough, organizations that care about this, whether it's because there's a pending lawsuit or a lawsuit, great. But you did say to me that this problem is, quote, more pervasive than you think. Can you just tell me what you mean by that?
Well, I think, if you look at organizational research, the places that are actually collecting data around, you know, my boss is someone I respect that I want to emulate. My boss, the best in me. Really basic metrics. We're not doing very well.
Yeah.
Across industries and sectors and organizations of all sizes. So however you define leadership, nobody would condone the kind of behavior you're describing in terms of demeaning, demoralizing, belittling, exploitative leadership. I think that's a pervasive norm, but I think the toxic effects of people feeling unimportant, insignificant, unwelcomed can come from far less toxic behavior.
Yeah.
My disregard for you, my not even knowing who you are, even mediocre leadership can have those same outcomes. They may not lead to gross lawsuits, but they lead to turnover and other unwanted outcomes. So it doesn't just take the horror show of a leader to create unwanted outcomes or toxic cultures or poor performance. It also takes even just leaders who are not that well trained, or leaders who weren't prepared for the roles you gave them, or leaders who are decent people but not particularly interested in making sure the environment around them is one everybody can.
Yeah.
So it's a whole spectrum of leadership failure that can create the toxic outcomes we're talking about. It isn't just the complete jerks.
Yeah, that is a great point. And thank you for the work you're doing. And thank you again for this conversation. I have learned so much from listening to you and understanding the way you approach these problems that I experienced for 25 years in my career. I kind of only wish I had met you 25 years ago, but thank you. This is helpful now. Speaking of that, how can people contact you for more information about your work and if they'd like to work with you?
Yeah, so you can go to navalent.com, NAVALENT.com. I assume you'll put those in your show notes to learn more about my firm. If you want to learn more about the research, which includes a bunch of chapters on bullying, you can go to BeHonest.net and you'll find videos and you'll find a whole TV series called Moments of Truth, where you get to see the heroes, the kinds of leaders we're all dying to work for, and the behind the scenes stories they tell on a 15 episode series, and also some webinar videos on what to be honest. But what the findings were in the research and bring them to life in your organization. Also, please follow me on LinkedIn.
Great, great, wonderful. And yes, there's very few things better than having a boss that inspires you and makes you feel good about the good work that you're doing. So Well said. Final word from me. We call ourselves, many of us, bully targets. I say it's time for us to aim and fire in a new direction, which is what we're trying to do right here. Thanks for watching. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Andy.